Hi, and welcome to Narrative Out Loud, the podcast for Narrative Magazine. I'm Carol Edgarian, editor and co-founder. We have a very special program for you today. Every year, we hold our Narrative Tell Me a Story High School Essay Contest. This year, we asked high school sophomores, juniors, and seniors to respond to the prompt, Dear America. Dear America. We heard from hundreds of young writers across the country and from around the world. They wrote about their hopes, their dreams, their concerns. They spoke from their hearts. Their voices are the voices of a new generation. Here, let's take a listen. First, we'll hear from Zinnia Finn reading her winning essay, Dear America.
Dear America, to my Agong you were a refuge, not a shining light that called him, but an escape from monotonous darkness. He didn't come to arrive, he came to go, and yet somehow that didn't matter. You still offered him so much, towering schools, lush libraries, and opportunities shining with crystals of light. You accepted him, based not on his past, but on his future, a future that shined almost as bright as you. To my Baba, you were an opponent. You represented everything she wanted and everything she thought she couldn't have. To her, you shined like a star with a light so stunning and so far out of reach. She can never appreciate your quintessential beauty, only see how hers was lacking. Every night, she looked in the mirror and rubbed the dark circles out of her eyes, not bothering to look beyond the surface and see the strong, capable woman inside. Instead, she would glare at the mirror, at you, and blame the iridescent glass for beating her in a battle she can never win. To me, well, it's complicated. You've meant a lot of things. You used to be a beacon of brightness on lonely nights, something I could look to as I lay in bed with all the other lights turned out. You were a cornucopia of opportunities, lush, ripe, and waiting for me to come and pick as I choose. You provided a dream life for all Americans and a dream for everyone else. You were the country that welcomed my Agong, the light that sparked a fierce loyalty in his eyes. I used to look at you with that same light. But now it's a bit different. I'm starting to see beyond the light of your skyscrapers. I see the shadows behind them, where immigrants like my grandparents are being tossed out of work, even though the calluses on their hands are etched representations of their hardest labor. I see the windows that adorn each floor, and how they are being washed by people getting $7 an hour, people risking their lives polishing a building inside of which they will never be allowed. I see the walls that were planned by men, built by men, and after all these years, still owned by men. I see a society built on calculated standards of beauty, and I start to see why my Baba despised her mirror. More and more, I'm losing sight of the brilliant fire my grandfather saw. Sometimes I lie awake at night, my thoughts melding with darkness. I don't have your comforting light any longer, but there are nights I like to think I don't need it anymore. There are other nights I know I still do. And it's those nights I know other people still need it too. It's on those nights that I've come to realize that embers still have hearts of fire. They are small but can provide a glow. So in the middle of all these shadows, America, you still have a chance. You just need to look out your windows, open your doors, and let your light illuminate what you've forgotten how to see. Then you will realize that you can still be the land that welcomed my grandfather. You can still be a brilliant fire in a darkened room. You can still be something to me.
Zinnia, I absolutely love this essay. We all did. I just thought it embodied so much thinking and so much heart. And I'm looking at you and you have so much heart. Now, this prompt in particular, it was a challenging one, Dear America. So how did you go about finding your voice? How did you go about addressing Dear America?
My initial thought was kind of about, we got this prompt pretty much right after the election, so that was definitely on my mind. And then that made me kind of start thinking about how I ended up here and my family ended up here. And then I kind of started writing. At first, the whole essay was actually going to be from the perspective of my grandparent, but then like halfway through, I realized that actually the very first one I wrote, it was from the perspective of kind of like I melded together my two grandparents because I couldn't decide, so it was from like this imaginary person. But then I finished writing it and I was like, I don't relate to this at all. Then I was like, I don't see how other people can relate to it then either. So I kind of restarted from scratch. And then actually when I got the the assignment in class, I remember I was thinking, I was like, I really don't want to make this political. But then the more I read it, the more I was like, well, how can you not really make it political? And I know that a lot of my other classmates were writing about other things like school, and one of them was doing something on social media. But I really felt like I wanted to do something from the roots of how I ended up in America, or how somebody ended up here. Like, what originally drew them here? So then I started to think about it, and I didn't want it to be a negative paper either, because I knew that there was a lot of negativity going around. So that was one thing when I started writing this. I was like, it needs to end on a positive note, for sure.
Of course, we'd all love to hear a bit more about your wonderful grandparents. What can you tell us about them?
Okay, so let's see. My agong, he's my grandfather on my mom's side, and he lives in San Francisco, so I see him every Sunday, which is really nice, along with my ama, who's my grandma. And yeah, this is pretty much his story. Like, he left his mom and all his siblings. He and his dad had to flee where they were, their original outpost, and it was in a province in China. I'm not sure which one. I've always found his story really eye-opening, because I remember the first time I heard it when I was really young. It's because we have this one blanket in our house, which is the one that he brought with him, because there was a bunch of other refugees who were trying to escape, and since he was only, I think, around 11 at the time, there's this older soldier, maybe around like 18, who gave him this army blanket. So we still have that in our house. I remember that's the first time I heard the story, and I just, even at that young age, it really made me think about how he had to leave everything he knew, and like, he didn't see his mom or his siblings again for a really long time. My grandfather, he did immigrate here, but he feels so, just innately, he feels so American inside of him, which is something that I've always really, like, I've really looked at it and admired it, because he just came here and he didn't see himself as an outsider. He was like, I am American, I am here, and like, he'll sing like the national anthem, and it really makes me think that like something here is going right.
I think finally I'd like to ask you, how do you feel about America today?
Definitely there is a bit of hope in there, and I think that maybe the frustration, it aside from some things that are happening with our current administration, but also just the fact that I think that a lot of people who are frustrated with that, they're kind of just taking all of that and converting it into anger and blaming it on people instead of trying to maybe do something with that or change it. Because even if there aren't ways to like change who's in the Oval Office right now, there are other ways to maybe try and combat what he's doing a little bit, or just even in your own heart sort out what America really means to you and what you want to do with that, and help how you're gonna help show that to others too.
Next, we'll hear from Hugo Anaya de Jesus reading his award-winning essay, Dear America.
On the same day I received my 8th grade diploma for academic excellence, I also received my first lesson in what it means to be a man of color in America. I come up the steps to the back of my house, where I'm met by police in full body armor, pointing their guns at me. Terrified, I obey every command and kneel. I know they do not see me as the passionate Latino student. They see me as what I am not and have never been, a drug-dealing Latino bringing down the community. Growing up, I remember listening to my tío Jesús as he shifted uncomfortably between two layers of blankets on the floor. All my life, I knew he was a troubled kid. His street life is what brought the cops to our door. As the cops searched my house, I fear the deportation of my hard-working parents, and I fear for my 11-year-old sister, whose face is smeared with tears. On my knees, I am left powerless. Held behind a barrier of assault weapons, I watch as those closest to me are taken away, and the innocent women I love the most suffer without mercy. In that moment, I make a choice between letting my anger take me into a life of struggle, or seeking a future no one in my neighborhood has ever known. Suddenly, it becomes clear. My education is my way out. Soon my achievements earn me access to next generation scholars a program that helps low-income students attend four-year universities. Instead of gaining power from gangs or from selling drugs, I wield power by excelling in school, lifting up my community, and building my voice as a young Latino man. Soon, I will earn my high school diploma and walk up those same back steps to the house the police took by force. I will never be the man they believed me to be when they forced me to kneel. I am the descendant of Aztec kings, a proud barrio nerd who stands ready to join others in redefining what it means to be a man of color in America.
Ugo, thank you so much for this essay. It just knocked me out. It raises so many provocative questions, and it skillfully leads us to the essential places, but it also leaves out enough that piques the reader's interest. So I want to start with you. Can you tell us a little more about your family?
So my mom and my dad are from Hidalgo, Mexico, and I have a 14-year-old sister. Oh, yeah, my uncle Jesus, he's 28, I think, and he lives like a couple of minutes away from our house. So, yeah, he's cleaned up a little bit, so that's good. So I think when my parents both came here, they're both like from the same town, but they actually met here. And where they first met was in Canal. And from what I've heard and from what they've told me, all the things that they experienced when they're like first living here was like very like harsh. Like, at the time, Canal, where they used to live, was, like, one of, like, the dangerous places here in Marin. And they used to live in, like, apartments where there's, like, 12 different people in the same apartment. So it's definitely, like, difficult for them to, like, pick themselves up from, like, this, like, poor and, like, economic background.
That's interesting. What would you say is particular about where you live?
So I live in Marin County, which is like, it's like one of the wealthiest counties in the world, or in the U.S. I mean. And what a lot of people think about Marin is like that it's a bubble in the U.S. And within that Marin bubble, there's like bubbles, there's like pockets, different kind of like community pockets within Marin.
How is it then to grow up in well-off, mostly white Marin County?
So where I live in San Rafael, which is 5 minutes away from Marin Academy, and just that 5 minute drive is such a distinct like two different worlds that like just never really experience unless you cross that threshold. And I definitely like see that throughout Marin. You think of like the wealthy houses, but like there's definitely like little invisible lines that definitely like separate each community.
Thank you, Ugo. That was fabulous. And finally, we'll hear from Scarlett Akeley, our first prize winner, reading her essay, Dear America.
Dear America, my grandfather has a space where the tip of his thumb should be. It's a little divot of roughened skin that is hard to notice until you placed your hand in his. He lost it in a factory accident in China decades ago. I remember how he told me the story of the heavy machinery and the heavy fall, and how a slow, deep voice seemed to carve itself into me. But when I was little, I used to like to trace the hardened scar tissue of my own soft little hands. I'd trace and think about how I could never live up to my grandfather's strength. America, this is your immigrant. Dear America, I sit in the half darkness of our kitchen in the morning. A bowl of oatmeal is in front of me, with a fresh snowfall of pork floss covering the top. My grandfather sits in quiet completion beside me. He has gone up long before I have, and so his bowl is already empty. I stick a spoonful of oatmeal in my mouth and smile around the handle at him. His arm feels frighteningly soft under my hand, but I can feel the ghost of solid strength with which he used to be built. In my mind, he is still an unmovable bronze statue. America, this is your immigrant. Dear America, my mother tells me one night what my grandfather once told her. She gathers my forever cold hands into her warm palms and tells me my grandfather's three firsts. He told her, 革命第一, 工作第一, 他人第一. My mother says it means revolution first, work first, others first. But she says she prefers to use dreams, not revolution.
America, this is your immigrant. Dear America, my grandparents met in college, my grandfather tells me. She was an amazing student and a track star, and, he laughs, ferocious. He tells me how they competed in an informal foot race on the college grounds, and how my ferocious track star grandmother lost. But, he laughs again, but only just. My grandfather laughs his love to the world, which is a good thing, because my grandmother shouts hers. Every Tuesday, I sit down to dinner with them. I can see life's hardships in every roughened line of his hands, and I can hear life's struggles in every strike of my grandmother's voice. But I look up and see the playful Cheshire Cat crinkles around his eyes, and I hear his soft, knowing chuckle, and I understand the secret to a full life. America, this is your immigrant. Dear America, I tell my grandfather one night, Mom told me these are your three firsts. Revolution first, work first, others first. He laughs. Yes, I remember saying that. I lay my head on his shoulder. She told me that she doesn't like the revolution part. She told me she prefers to say dreams instead. He pats my knee. Really? He asks, and contemplates for a moment. I think revolution is an important part of America, I say. He shakes his head. Revolution means cutting lives. His smile for once makes me unsure. He continues. I remember I used to say revolution first, but I also remember changing that. When I first came to America, I was all alone across the ocean in a small room in Chicago. And you know what I thought? I shake my head no against the soft knit of his sweater. He turns his head toward mine and gently chucks me under the chin. Family first, he laughs. America, this is your immigrant.
Scarlett, thank you so much for reading this wonderful essay. So, I've got to ask you, where did you get your inspiration?
Well, I drew from my family a lot, and this story came from a specific conversation, which I ended the story with, about my family's motto and the motivation in life. And I really thought that it was interesting to compare my mother and my grandfather, who are really important people in my life.
So you've said your grandparents are really important to you. And I would add, now they're important to me, and I think to all of us. Tell us a little more about them, will you?
Well, my mother is Chinese, and so my grandfather and grandmother are both from China. My father is American, and I was mostly raised by my grandparents. So they took care of me for the first few years of my life, mostly. My parents were working a lot, and so I'm really, really close with them, and they mean a whole lot to me.
Your first line really stood out. My grandfather has a space where the tip of his thumb should be. That is a great launch into story. And you have this sense of just commanding as a storyteller. Where did that line come from?
Well, I was thinking about how to describe my grandfather. He is a really complicated person. And I think that was what noticed that would stand out to me first. He's such a happy person, but he has experienced a lot of hardship in his life, and that's one of the only physical reminders you have of that. And I wanted to show his nuanced person really clearly from the get-go.
Let's close with a question I asked Zinnia as well. How are you feeling about America? Or I should maybe say America vis-a-vis this idea of revolution.
I think I'm more conflicted. I'm somewhere in the middle. I think dreams are really important, and that's a huge part of American culture. But I think that the revolution my grandfather experienced is very different from revolution in America. Revolution can be a really good force, but I think it's good to remember how much hardship it can bring as well. I just sort of wanted to show a balance in between.
Thank you, Scarlett.
Thank you. This is a wonderful experience, and I'm really honored.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Narrative Out Loud, a production of Narrative Magazine. I'm Carol Edgarian, and for all of us here, see you again soon.